Hi guys, this is Ciro Neoli. I am the executive producer of Nickelodeon's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you are listening to the Master of One podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Master of One podcast, the podcast that has an open seat in our gyro ball with your name on it. In this episode, we talk about Dracarion, Rise of TMNT, and Jurassic World. I'm Andrew, your Master of Art and Design.
I'm Patrick, your Master of Television and Film.
And I'm Luke, your Master of Toys and Games.
So grab your night vision goggles and a box of flares, because it's time to get this episode running.
Why is the water shaking?
Episode off by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy about our weeks. Patrick, why don't you tell us about how your week has to have been going?
Absolutely. So this week, thankfully been able to see a lot of films recently, and this trend continues, but this one I would say has been probably top two watches of this year so far, and that's the documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor, which is from Morgan Neville. Now the Morgan Neville or Neville, I don't know, it's probably Neville, but
it's probably Neville.
Like Neville would sound, you know.
That was Aaron Neville. That was my Aaron.
No, yeah, yeah, we great. Got it. That's better than your Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, it's similar.
I have my Morgan Freeman. That was my
Barry Gibb?
Barry Gibb. That was Bee Gees, yeah.
That was Barry Gibbs.
It's just Gibb. I don't think there's an S.
Well, no, that was my multiple Gibbs impressionation.
At their at their family reunion, it's definitely Gibbs.
Yeah. That's true. So Morgan Neville,
the family reunion.
I'm just going to talk through it and then it'll probably stop. So Morgan Neville, the director behind Won't You Be My Neighbor, he also did the documentary Burn. And he did a documentary 20 Feet from Stardom, as well as a bunch of other ones. But Best of Enemies. So anyway, you've probably seen his work before. But Won't You Be My Neighbor talks about Fred Rogers, and it talks about his background. It dispels some myths about his background, how he got into television, and then moves through that progression. And then also kind of where he was at very late in his life. And one thing... one thing that I'll say is that in his time, he was incredibly highly honored. So, like, I grew up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and I'm sure y'all did as well.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, even as, like, when I was a kid, I didn't find it the most exciting show. And so I didn't really have any strong opinions about Fred Rogers, and the show was fine. It was something to watch in that, like, you know, it was kind of what I was forced to watch a bit. But I don't know that I necessarily like overly enjoyed it or not, but certainly it was harmless. Now, growing up and learning more about his legacy and the life of the person, you find out that he's somebody that on camera is the same as he is off camera, like the same kind of demeanor, the same kind of intentionality, the same kindness, the same all those things. But the thing that you don't pick up and that they go into pretty good detail in the documentary about is that he was never any more sure of himself, you know, the month before he died than he was the day he set off into television. And the doubts that he had
in terms of his influence.
Yeah, in terms of his influence and just his ability to create, because he has a very heavy musical background. And but his ability, because he was the one writing the shows, like writing the scripts, writing a lot of the music for the shows, writing, coming up with all the characters, the topics. I mean, this was Fred Rogers' show. And even when he gets several decades into this, he still feels no more competent as a creative or as this creator than he did the day he started. And I thought that was fascinating. So
this is downplays it a little bit, but we hear that a lot from even people we have talked to on this show, or just, you know, they have that
imposter syndrome.
Yeah. That imposter syndrome where, you know, these people have a gallery showing a whole show is theirs. And they're just like, yeah, I'm not good enough, or I wish I was better at this. And it's just, it's really weird to hear that about Fred Rogers, but at the same time, he's just a dude.
We hear it a lot, but you would still think after 912 episodes on public television that that would diminish.
Yeah,
some.
For sure.
Like, you would think at a certain point, it's kind of like, it feels, you just feel like, well, obviously I can do this, or I wouldn't have made it 900 episodes in. And so the fact that wasn't the case, and if anything, at least the way the documentary plays out, you kind of feel like it gets worse in later years.
Maybe because it was PBS and they're just always asking for money. So maybe he felt like he wasn't doing good enough.
No, I think I know why.
I was joking.
It's the world. The world around us got worse.
Sure.
And he took it on as his personal mission to bring light into the world. And I think he got to a point where he felt so discouraged because he realized what can he do as one man with the insurmountable bad that there is in the world? That's kind of the vibe I got at the end of the film.
So, absolutely. I would say that's accurate. So it's, just go watch the documentary. Like, I can't say enough good things about it. It's incredibly compelling. Here's what I remember through my tears was as soon as the movie ended, just seeing boxes of tissues being passed like up and down theater rows.
Really?
For everybody.
The theater provided tissues. When you walked in, there was like a bowl of tissues with boxes of tissues for people to take. I cried a lot. Like,
was it like happy and sad crying?
Yeah. It was moving, right? Yeah. So,
like nostalgia and joy, but that also someone sadness.
That someone could be that good is moving. Like seeing some of these scenes that were off camera, where they weren't off camera, obviously, but they were off like the main camera, off stage,
off air. Yeah,
yeah, and seeing how he interacted with people. And then there's a couple of points, especially towards the end of the movie, where the filmmakers and the interviewees, the people who are being interviewed, the interviewees, challenge you to view things through a specific lens and to identify specific people in your life who hit these different tones. And there's pauses specifically intended for you to reflect about specific people. Like, wow. The movie is intended to make you not necessarily cry, but intended to make you feel.
Sure.
Like they are actively trying to do it, and they're not hiding it at all. Like, it's obviously they were giving out tissues. It was like the first movie where I was okay to cry because I literally knew everybody else in the theater was crying.
Sure.
Yeah. There is something incredibly radical about a single person with a simple, diligent, deliberate focus. And that's what this entire life was. There's a couple things I want to say to kind of hammer that point home, but I want to not say them because you'll hear them in the documentary. But all aspects of his life just were so deliberate and focused on this very small point. And it's just crazy good. I walked out of there thinking, other than, wow, that was incredible, and wanting to go visit the Mr. Rogers Museum, I also walked out there thinking, like, my kids, this is all they're going to watch for the first 15 years of their life.
It made me leave going, oh man, am I parenting wrong?
But yeah, crazy good documentary. So I've said too much about it. Won't You Be My Neighbor? It's in theaters now. Go watch it before it's not in theaters. And then when it's out of theaters, watch it again. Go watch it with your parents. Watch it with your friends. Watch it with your kids. Like, just watch it with as many people as you can, because people should see it. It is good and healthy for people to see this documentary.
Yep.
And don't shy away because it might make you feel things. It's you should do it. So
cool.
All right, Andrew.
Yeah. Well, it's been a crazy week. I've been recovering from surgery, so it's been a little over a week and a half since last we did this conversation, since we did this whole podcast record thing. And that's because I really couldn't talk or interact a whole lot for the latter half of last week and then into the weekend. And then things started kind of I'm coming out of that stupor a little bit. But I had nasal surgery, and oh my gosh, you can't breathe afterwards for quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
And you're forced to breathe through your mouth, and I had a breathing tube in while I was having the surgery, obviously. I guess that's not obvious, but if you think about it, it makes sense.
Sure.
And breathing tubes, if you've never had one, they suck.
Yeah.
They are not good. They feels like they tear up the inside of your throat. And so when you can only breathe through your mouth for 2 to 3 days afterwards, and your throat is already dry and cut up, it's like a nightmare. Oh my gosh. But anyway, I'm on the mend now. Healing is happening. And in the next like week or so, I should be cleared to go kind of back to normal. Even if there's still some stuff going on inside my head, for the most part, I'll be able to go back to regularly scheduled programming. But other than that, I finally, I've talked about Cuphead before, and I love Cuphead and the artistry behind it and the gameplay and everything about it. I love it. The music. Well, Funko Mystery Minis, they put out a line. They advertised the line for the Cuphead. Don't make a deal with the devil, or don't deal with the devil. Mystery Minis. And but I felt like that announcement came out and I didn't see them anywhere for a long time, for several months at least. And then finally got them in my area, and I got a handful of them. So I'll show them to you real quick. Here's Mugman. I know you guys don't play the game, but anyway, here's Mugman. Here's the devil.
Those are pretty good.
One thing hopefully that you'll notice when you look at them is the quality of them. Here's Mr. Dice. He's one of the main villains. Here's the very first bad guy you kind of encounter. He's a triple-eyed, like...
carrot?
Yeah, but what do you... A psychic carrot, essentially. Oh,
gotcha. Yeah.
Is the third eye painted on, or is it like a real eye?
No, it's a real eye. He shoots laser beams out of it at you. And then this pirate guy.
Looks like Bluto.
With the double peg leg.
Double peg leg. I'm trying to get this into focus so that you can see it. But the detail is actually, even though they're very simplistic characters, you can do simple. We talked about this last week on the show. You can do simple poorly, or you can do simple really well. And these... Because they're so simple, they had to execute well in order for them to look good, and they executed extremely well.
They're large. See,
well, yeah, I mean, they're not really that. I mean, they're mystery minis. They're typically about 3 inches tall.
Is that the only one that has a base?
Because he has the two peg legs, he does. This one kind of does. He's coming out of the ground.
Oh, the ground, yeah.
Okay. Well, you held up the first Cuphead, and that one looked pretty tiny. Yeah. And then you held up the
double relationally.
Yeah, they're proportional.
They're relationally the right size.
They're proportional.
Size. Yeah.
I see.
That's Mugman next to the bad guy. So, very, 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 very well done. And I'm trading with a couple people on our Discord channel because I got some dupes. But man, their mystery minis, honestly, are where the money's at right now with Funko, in my opinion. I think they're very, very well done. I showed you the Darkwing Duck and all those, and you remember how good those looked. I just think, I don't know. I just continue to be impressed with the stuff that they're putting out. Not everything is a winner, and not everything is a runaway in terms of their lines, but their mystery minis right now, I think, are banging on all cylinders. And they're doing the properties that I enjoy too. So
yeah,
that obviously helps. But other than that, it's been pretty just trying to get back in the swing of things after being out and everything. So I'm going to be alone for the next 2 weeks. Chandra and Cooper, by the time this airs, will have been gone for 3 days, but they leave in the morning on record day. And they'll be gone for 2 weeks. So I'm going to be a bachelor. I'm going to be playing hopefully a lot of games, watching a lot of movies, maybe try to actually make some progress on Fallout 4.
Nice.
You know, just that kind of stuff. So that's it for my week. Luke.
Yeah. So I was able to go see two films. We'll talk about one later. I went and saw Tag. Patrick mentioned this last week. It was fine. I wanted it to be better. I didn't hate it, but I wanted it to be better. I found that partway through the movie, I was ready to get to the next phase of the movie. It was just like a little slow.
How did the kind of big I'll call it joke, but the kind of shocking joke, how did that hit you?
What? I don't know if I remember exactly which joke you mean.
With Jeremy Renner's character and his fiance.
Oh, you know what? Like, honestly, it's whatever. At that point in the film, I expected it. I guess not the subject of it, but I expected that it was going to be a
right. But the subject,
a scheme. The subject is in poor taste.
Yeah,
it's okay. Just it's not. It's like I was thinking, like somebody in the audience has experienced this. What happens to that person?
Wait, the movie's been out for what, 3 weeks now?
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
It's been long enough we can talk about it.
I was going to say, can't we just talk about it? Like, isn't that fine?
Yeah, so there's a joke made. So the whole premise, like Patrick said last week, there's five guys that have grown up playing tag once a month for however many years since they were in grade school up until now. They play tag. And Jeremy Renner's character has never been tagged. And so, but he's getting married. So they're all getting together and they're getting married in the month that they play tag. And so the whole movie is they're trying to figure out how to get him. And there is a point in the movie where his fiance, who has been, has said that she's pregnant. There's a point where they're seemingly going to get him. And she kind of freaks out because of the stress of the wedding and says she's having him.
It was the wedding day.
Yeah. It's like in the morning. And she said she's having a miscarriage. They put the wedding on hold and they go to the hospital and everything changes for the group. And then you find out later, it's not real.
That none of it was real.
It was a ploy to keep from him from getting tagged.
And it's, and they were so competitive and he's a super competitive guy and he's marrying somebody that is just as competitive. And they came up, that was their ace in the hole for, if something happened, that's what they could play to turn the tide in their favor. And it just was, it all makes sense. Like it all plays out in strategy and all that stuff, but it's just a poor taste joke. Like it's just, I don't understand how you do that, and that's okay.
So they filmed an alternate to that scene because they were also afraid that the joke was going to be that they were going to get into the cutting room and realize that like this isn't going to work. We're pushing it too far. I guess they didn't. So there's apparently an alternate to that outcome, but I just don't know what it is. I know that that was their first choice for that scene.
Like, yeah,
that there was a miscarriage was not the.
Yeah, was not it wasn't the, that. The, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right. There's one where it's not a miscarriage. Exactly.
Like you were saying, Luke, like I was thinking the same thing. Like if you, and this is a good, PSA, if you haven't seen it yet and you've had a miscarriage in your family or you've had one or it's someone close to you has, be aware that that's there because that could really, really more than just put you off from a movie. Instantly trigger all sorts of things.
Yeah,
you don't
you're out on a date going to a comedy for a fun night, usually with your significant other, and that happens, and that just totally changes your mindset. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I think the risk of that is not worth the payoff for the joke. Like, it could have been. I mean, the way they made her character, like the way we met her character, she was so high strung. I think it would play almost as well of her just deciding to leave him or not get married to him. Like,
right. But I think the thing of this, that's probably a lot more predictable. And so they went for the shock element and they got it. I think they got it. So anyway,
I don't know. Anyway, so I saw Tag. So that's Tag. If you, in the end, they actually tag him. So that's the whole movie. You don't have to watch it. Other than that, really nothing else. I've been printing away. I went through a whole spool of filament, and I'm working on my second. This thing has been running nonstop basically since I got it.
Why aren't you posting pictures of these things on Discord?
I don't know.
Are you building a full size ship at this point?
Yeah, hold on.
Seriously, like, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking.
I don't know that I'm upset. I mean, I don't know that they shouldn't have done the joke. I agree that it's important. That looks great.
That does
He's
look
showing
great.
Us like, a ship right now.
Why aren't you taking pictures of this on Discord?
I will. I'll post
this
a picture.
Is this a galleon?
It's a brig.
A freighter? It's a what?
A brig. The brig.
It's a brig? I thought the brig was part of the ship. Like, put him in the brig.
Well, yeah. I mean, but this is, I guess this is essentially a, nah, it's not a galleon. It's like a.
It's a pirate ship. What's wrong
with
people?
It's like a very stereo. Yeah, but there's a name for it. It's but a very it's stereotypical
armored.
Looking.
So the difference is this has like armor banding and some armored spots here for cannons and stuff.
Let me
stuff.
Just tell you, that armor's doing nothing. If a cannon's coming at that thing, it's just going to go straight through the wood but or the plastic.
Not the metal. What if it hits the metal?
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it'll go through the wood.
No, it looks great. It's all painted. You got last week you showed us two sections that were printed that you told us they could put
it's not
fit together.
On the
if this you want to see it, he's going to post it in Discord as
I'll
soon
post
as this
it
is over.
Someday.
Yeah, this now there's three sections put together, painted. It looks freaking awesome.
And I have all the interior too. I printed the interior so you can go down like as you go down into the ship. There's all the other pieces.
Yeah, you can't fit in the ship. Kind of pointless, but you did it.
but yeah, that's it. It's been a good week. That's okay. It.
Well, that's it then. That's for the week. Up next, we're going to talk about some master categories. Master categories each week, and we get to talk about the tokens we drew the week before. This week, we are all talking about our own dang subjects. What up with that?
It's our show. We do what we want.
Why don't we save yours till the end?
All right.
I'm fine with that.
Because we can all contribute to yours because you're TV and film, and you're talking about Jurassic World. Luke, you left us off. Why don't you pick us up here?
Okay. Mine isn't going to be very long. So there's been a game, you know, as you get into board games, you get into stuff that's just more in depth, more mechanics. I've talked about games like Terraforming Mars, Anachrony, things that are just like worker placement games, pretty structured, lots of rules, lots of things going on. There's been a game that I've been looking at for the last like 2 years. It's called Tricarion, and the idea is it's a worker placement game, but everybody plays a magician. You have a crew, you have your manager, your assistant, your stagehands, all this, and it's worker placement. So you're taking these people, they're going out into the city to get blueprints to so you can make bigger and better stage illusions, and you get points, and whoever has the most points at the end or does the best gets this Tricarion stone is what you're trying to get, and that supposedly gives people supernatural powers. The Illusionist, it's basically the Illusionist movie as a board game. So that theme was like really cool to me, but it's also a super heavy Euro worker placement game, and there is a million pieces. It's just so many things going on.
Yeah, right?
So it's a little daunting. Well, they had a Kickstarter, so they have a expansion that just came out. It is the Dalgard's Academy expansion, and what they did, they bundled it with the original game, so you could pick up both the core game and the expansion, and the core game comes with some better components and like a different designed box, like a special edition box, and the expansion. And so I picked it up on Kickstarter. It ended actually today as a recording, so it's not available anymore. But I'm super excited about this game.
Thanks for the heads up on this.
Well, it's fine. You can play the one I got at some point. But it looks super duper awesome. I'm excited, but I'm also a little scared because I've read on Board Game Geek a lot of people going, oh, this game looks amazing. I started reading the rule book and I decided to pause because there's just so many things happening on the board. But it looks awesome. The theme looks great. The the design is what caught me initially. I saw it at Gen Con 2 years ago on the table, and I was like, what is this? Because it looks really cool. It's, I don't know, Andrew, can you help me describe what this art style is? It's illustrated, but it's like...
It's, yeah. I mean, it's illustrated. It's a top-down three-quarter skew.
Yep.
So you're kind of looking down. Think of Clue. Clue is a good example of it because Clue, like, you're looking straight down at it, but you're also seeing the walls kind of tilted out so that you can see some of the detail on the walls and things. It's kind of a cross between, I would call it a vibrant realism.
Yeah.
So the components look real, but if it's a green plant, it's a very green plant.
Right. Yeah, that's perfect. But it caught me. The art style caught me, and it looks good on the table. And there's a whole bunch to it. So,
I love the intentional imperfections in like there's missing tiles from the roof. There's part of the building is in disrepair, and there are repair people there working on it. Like tiny little details like that, I think are very. Very cool to see in a game like this.
Yeah. It's like they took the time. So the big board is the city where you're doing these things. So you have to have your people go out and do different things in the city.
Like a street magician.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it looks awesome. I'm super excited for it. It says shipping March of 2019. So we'll see. It'll be long enough that I'll forget I even did it. And so, but that's it, Andrew. I guess you're up next.
Yeah. So I teased this or talked briefly about it a couple months ago when the reveal of the new Ninja Turtle series was announced. It is the new 2D animation version of the Ninja Turtles. It's called Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I am... going to talk about that for a little bit. So I had art and design. They did the just yesterday on release day, they released the full intro. And one of the biggest things with Ninja Turtles, I mean, I guess it's true with a lot of other properties, especially ones that gripped you when you were in the 80s, like when you were a kid or something like that. I guess depending on how old you are is how, when that would be, but especially 80s cartoons, I'll say it that way. The intro was kind of, that was make or break in some ways.
Yeah.
If that didn't catch you immediately, it was really hard to get sucked into a TV show. You had to be able to hear that playing in the background and run into the room.
Yeah, like excited. Gummy bears. That was gummy bears for me.
Yeah. And so you've got all these different, there's, you know, a whole bunch of different ones growing. You know, there's the He-Man, there's Masters of the Universe, there's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there's the Golden Girls, all G.I. of these Joe. Things. Yeah, G.I. Joe, MacGyver.
Transformers.
Robots all of these in
things
disguise.
That were a huge component. So they released the new intro for
this. Wait, did you say Highlander?
No.
That was my favorite show as a child.
I believe you.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. There can only be one.
I was Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
That's what I learned. That's what I what learned through watching.
What was your favorite
watching.
Show, though?
My favorite show?
Yeah.
Like animated or...
Well, you said I was Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. So what was your favorite show, though?
Oh, I see. Yes, I always went as Dr. Quinn Medicine Quinnicent Women. I wish that was on purpose. But something tells me it doesn't matter because Luke's leaving it in. So,
love you.
Anyway, they released the new introduction to the show. And this show has been getting so much hate. Because people, there's this phrase that I keep hearing time and time again, because there's all these different reboots, there's all these different reimagining of these properties that we grew up with. I hate the phrase that people are ruining my childhood. I hate that. That's all. That's my, I was expecting maybe one of you to say, yep, or.
That's would you life. Hate it?
I mean, that's my life. I feel like that's my mantra. Is everything's ruining my childhood.
That's true. You're the most negative You have such a positive look on your childhood.
Yes.
Probably because you hate every moment of your adulthood.
That's true.
But either way, anyway, I'm tired of that phrase. And that has definitely has been resurrected since they released this thing. People are so upset because they've taken the original song and they've kind of remixed it. And the new song is kind of a tribute to the old song, but uses components of the old song and remixes it in.
Wait, but why do you think people feel that way though? Like, why is that a recurring thing? Like, why do people care as much as they do?
Bro, if I could tell you that, I would probably be at least 75% less frustrated when people do it. If I could identify why that matters so much, that goes back to, and this is way, we're going to tantrum this for like 30 seconds. I'm going to kick it back over. That whole deal, that petition to have Star Wars remade, and they've raised like $90 million to have Star Wars remade, that hashtag remake what? Star Wars or whatever. You've not seen this?
No.
It is a movement.
They have that much in pledges. Nobody's actually paid any money, and the pledges
this
are
remake what? Pledged, which Star Wars? And,
To remake The Last Jedi.
Oh, good. They should. That's a garbage movie.
No, they shouldn't. This is my point. The movie is the movie. Let the movie stand. You have to. You like it, you don't like it, whatever. It's not. Several people have said, if you don't do it, it will have ruined Star Wars for me forever. Like, get over your life.
Yeah.
Like, come on. That is.
If
that
you
is such,
want it remade, then go to film school and become a director and get hired by a big studio and remake the thing. I don't know. I mean, sure. Here's the point, because that's obviously hyperbole, but my point is, there are large groups of people that put in a ton of time and a ton of effort and care deeply about the work they do. It's not like all of Hollywood just goes to work and just BS, BS, BS. I'm just dollar, dollar, dollar. Don't care about the crap I push out. The fact is that these people do care about what they're making.
Yeah, they were trying to make something great. It just turned out it wasn't great.
Yeah, it just turned out it wasn't great. And that's for, you know, your opinion, that's fine, because I actually really like the movie. Well, but the point is, it is what it is. And then there'll be another movie. They'll reboot it. We're about to get another TMNT. Another TMNT like reboot in like year or whatever.
Right. Why are you stealing? Why? That was part of my...
Oh, was it?
You dick.
So my point is, like, just everybody chill on like taking a dump on everybody's work.
Right.
They're going to... More work will come out.
Well,
you're
so
fine.
Here's the thing that everybody seems to forget. And this might be... might help put perspective on kind of what we were talking about of why it matters, is we've done that as we've grown up, right? Because most of the people saying this stuff about these reboots or these ruining my childhood are our age. It's our generation. Maybe a little older than us, but it's generally our age.
Well, it's your age.
Well,
Patrick
whatever.
And I are...
whatever. It's fine. But the thing that we forget is we did that to... our parents' generation with all the stuff that we redid, like that ruined their childhood or, you know, changed their culture. And it's
like rock and roll.
Right. And it just, that's just what happens. Like, just let it, I mean, whatever. Kids ruin things. That's just life. Kids ruin things.
And well, so, I think the thing, okay. So anyway, that was meant to be a tangent, not a whole subject. So I'm going to bump us back over.
I do like the kids ruin things. I feel like that could become a slogan for our show.
That could be a shirt
well,
for sure.
So,
kids ruin things and have the Master of One icon at the bottom of it.
maybe not like our children. Like, I like my kids. But in general, like
they
the younger
so
generation just always just...
They're just turds.
Trashes the older stuff. And that's just what happens.
I have a story to tell you guys off air. Because if to say it on air would publicly tell people how bad of a parent I am, so I'm not going to tell it. Patrick has a hint of it, only because of proximity, but I have to just tell you this stupid, stupid story. All right, anyway, Rise of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The big controversy is the style of the turtles and the animation, and they think that it's just terrible. And I am of the adage that I am just happy to see the turtles continue to live in pop culture.
Yeah.
They've never really left pop culture. Tell me any properties that have been able to sustain multiple iterations over a 30-year period and still live inside the popular culture scene.
James Bond.
That are other than the Ninja Turtles. Tell me.
Mickey Mouse.
James Bond.
You can't talk at the same time.
Mickey Mouse.
Son of a gun. OK, Okay, Mickey Mouse. What'd you say, Patrick?
I said James Bond. Does it have to be animated?
Yeah, I'm talking about like a series. Like, well, I mean, I guess that's fine. Yeah, James Bond can work too. James Bond, Mickey Mouse. Who else?
How long? Simpsons have only been going like 20.
They're close to 30. They're like they're 26 years. Or 27 years now.
Batman.
Do you have a list you're looking at?
No. I've in my mind thought of about a handful, not many, and that's my point.
Sure.
And on top of that, it has changed hands so many times,
right,
and been under the direction of so many different people, and I just don't understand.
Batman is a good one.
Yeah. I just don't understand why people can't get on board with the fact, because these are the quote unquote true fans, right?
Because Simpsons hasn't really had like
it hasn't changed.
Slight stylistic changes, but it hasn't been like
it was more refining.
Refining, but exactly. To be fair,
it's not in the forefront now. It's not in pop culture. I wouldn't say it's in pop culture now.
Where Batman has had like action and animated and different styles, yeah. And it is, yeah, that's
Batman
that's
is a better, in, yeah, it is a better version of, yeah, of this, yeah. And Batman's been around for 75 years,
yeah.
So the point is, there's very few properties out there that have been able to stand the test of time and keep up with the culture. Anything that does that has to do exactly that. It has to keep up with the culture in order to be culturally relevant.
Right.
And so the people who are getting upset about this because of the new look of the Turtles, that's not the Donnie that I love. That's not the Michelangelo that I always laugh at. It's not. All of that idea, all that mindset that is changed simply by the characterization of something,
yeah,
is coming from these people that in the industry, not in the industry, in the scene, they're called true fans, right? The quote unquote true fans. It is usually identified with a Z, right? True fans with a Z. That say that they're like, they're bastardizing the pure version of what these characters should be. But the reality is that happened the second they were no longer the very first iteration.
Yeah.
And we get all up in arms and we make all this fuss and we get all out of, you know, disoriented and out of our, what's the word? I wanted to say out of my pants, but that's not a thing.
No.
What do you call it?
Get your like pants out in of your, a twist.
Yep. Getting your pants in a twist. But the reality is, if it's a property that we love, they're still going to watch it.
Right.
And they're going to watch it, and they're going to complain about it. But they're like, because I'm a true fan, I'm going to continue to watch it.
Yeah, I can't not watch it. I've watched every other one.
Exactly. And so when are we going to get past that point and just say, to let's just be happy?
Well,
because Masters of the Universe, if you grew up loving Masters of the Universe and He-Man, you don't have the kind of options that you have. You have the 80s cartoons and you have that one movie.
Yeah.
And that's it. We get to continue to live out the Ninja Turtles on the big screen, now back at the small screen. And like Patrick already said, and this was going to be the end of my thing. We will be seeing them again on the big screen after everyone said, we're not going to see any more of the Turtles on the big screen because of what happened to them with Michael Bay and all of that jazz. We are getting them back. Let's just be happy that it's happening. And so if you don't know anything about the new stylistic, there's going to be the style of the Ninja Turtles. There will be a link in the show notes. I am thrilled with the direction it's going. Does it take a little bit of getting used to? Absolutely.
Sure.
But the colors are vibrant. It seems fun. It seems action packed.
Well,
and man, I can't wait.
It's also giving younger people a chance to love these characters, even if it's not the exact same characters. Like, if you're a true fan of the Turtles, wouldn't you want other people to love the Turtles?
That's therein lies the catch 22, right? People want their thing to be cool enough for people to continue to make things for it, but not so cool that people have their own say in what it looks like.
Right. Well,
and that therein lies the catch 22.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, that was me. Rise of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Super, super excited about it. Check out the link in the show notes to see that. To see the new introduction. Let us know what you think. In the Discord channel, we have a movie and or a TV show. What do we call it? A TV?
TV discussion.
Discussion? The TV discussion channel. Let us know what you think in there. It's, man, I'm excited. I can't wait. It's like a month away, month and a half away, and I can barely wait. So, all right, Patrick, take us down to Chinatown.
Absolutely. The big film this week is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Now, in the Jurassic World set of films. I mean, this is really, so there was what, a 13-year hiatus.
Yep.
After the 1993 film. And then now there's been another, a few years have passed before we get Fallen Kingdom. But this is kind of the second film of, well, this is of my adulthood. But the second Jurassic World. And in this one, so, you know what's funny, guys? Sitting here thinking about it, I don't remember a ton of the first film. I mean, I saw in theaters. And I know it's an island and they've recreated the theme park. Yeah. On like Isla Nublar or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And obviously.
I guess they have recreated
it. There's like a new theme park.
They officially opened it.
Right.
They reopened. It's on the same island. They reopened it.
Yeah.
And then basically all the dinosaurs, like when it ends, everybody's fleeing and the park is like abandoned. Well,
they crossbred a more powerful dinosaur and.
The Andromedus Rex.
Indominus Rex, yes.
The Antonimans Rex.
The Entimans Rex. It's just a big donut dinosaur. I want that one.
Cream filled. It's like a big Boston cream.
Gross. In the first one, it's just that. It's basically the same thing as the original Jurassic Park. There's a park. There's some kids. Stuff goes bad. Everybody has to escape.
You want to play God, things go bad, and the island's left alone. And so when we, so that should say something about the first film. Wasn't exactly too memorable. However, the studio remembers it very well because it was a huge movie, like largest opening numbers. And I mean, the thing just made a fortune.
It's not terrible. It really isn't. Like I rewatched it in the last month with Milo, and
I watched it the day before.
It's fine. It's not bad at all. It's not great, but it's not bad.
I liked it a lot.
Well, where we pick up with Fallen Kingdom, and obviously I won't, give away any spoilers.
Sure.
Although again, it's a bit of a tough film to spoil in that when you watch a film like this, you're not caring too much about the plot. You're just kind of in it to see giant dinosaurs tear junk up. But that being said, it picks up where left off. So the island is abandoned at this point. There are dinosaurs, just kind of roaming free. And but the volcano that sat dormant at the center of the island is about to erupt. And so they're left with this decision do dinosaurs that have been genetically built, basically created, have a right to live the same way that humans do or other animals? So should we intervene in what is basically a big science project, or do we let them go extinct? And there's kind of a hidden third option, which is another group trying to also go in and get the dinosaurs before, the volcano erupts. So I'll stop there. That's what is the setup beginning of the film. And I can promise you that the film does take the storyline takes a pretty dramatic shift couple parts. Now, I will say, thankfully, if you've seen the previews, I know you can get the feeling of like, oh, I've seen the preview and it's ruined the whole movie and it gave so much away. A couple of things. One, it didn't. And two, they actually didn't use some of the very prominent scenes from the previews. I mean, there's one scene in particular I remember in the preview, which is like Chris Pratt looks at Blue and basically says, like, we gonna do this? It's like this, like, buddy cop moment. And that line was not in the film. That scene was not in the film. And that's one.
The best correlation would probably be the amount of misdirection that happened in Infinity War's promo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a good correlation between those.
So that's a scene that had already set up the movie in a bad way for me, in a negative way. And then it wasn't even in the film. So I'll just say, if you've seen the preview, don't put too much stock in that. Still go see the film. Now, thankfully, I do think the film, honestly, the film from a flow standpoint was better than I expected for the film. Now, before we get into any more detail and before we have a discussion, we need to do a quick rating for it. So that's kind of like the overview. I'm going to go and jump in. I said this in the Discord today. I am probably a 4 out of 10. You could maybe, because Andrew's charismatic, talk me up to a 5. But it is low.
I'm going to have you in a 6 by the end of the night.
Okay. It is low. So Andrew, where are you at?
Now with a tiny asterisk, which we'll get into in a second. I'm going to sit comfortably at an 8 out of 10, but that's with removing one component to the plot or one of the many subplots that wasn't necessary. I'm just kind of removing that from my mind, giving it an 8.
Okay, so you're self-editing. Luke?
I think it sits fair at an 8. I think that's fine.
Wow, I shouldn't be surprised. Okay, so that's reviews of the film. Now, here's what I struggle with.
Now you really do sound pretentious.
I'm going to say, thanks for that.
It's Jurassic World.
We'll tell that story later. So we'll tell our patrons that story. So anyway, I'm going to say broadly my feelings of the film, and I'll let you do that. And then I think it'll be fine if we just dip our toe into some spoilers but we'll say it. We'll say we're going to do it.
Yeah.
My issue is that it just feels like a 75% finished film. Even though they had 3 years to make the film, and although I'm sure the CGI took up the majority of that, I mean, I'm imagining... Well,
that's 3 years probably just render time. I think they did the movie in about a month. That's what I was going
to
say.
It probably rendered up until 5 minutes before I sat down in the theater. So, but that being said, it didn't feel finished. There are some pretty major plot revelations during the film that, frankly... were handled very clumsily, kind of like thrown. It just felt kind of like thrown in or tacked on. And that felt really weak to me. And then the way that I have to be careful, I have to dance around it a bit. But the world that we're kind of shown and the world we're told about, this is going to be futuristic to a degree because they have cloned living dinosaurs and also some of the tech they have with managing them. So it is even a slightly futuristic world. There are things within the world that to me are inconsistent. They don't feel like they add up in some of those things come into play in the plot. And so that feels lazy when that happens. And so,
okay.
I did think that Chris Pratt and who's his co-star, what's her name? Bryce Dallas Howard. I did think that they actually had good chemistry, and some of the other primary characters were kind of shown. I thought there was a lot of good chemistry for the most part among the goodies. Among the baddies, they kind of played like B movie leftovers, and so that I also struggle with it. It wasn't very challenging to get to. So anyway, I if a delay in the film had meant a cleaner script, like a couple more rewrites, I would have preferred that because the visuals are beautiful. I thought the setup was good enough. I mean, I don't think we needed any more setup than we had. I don't think we needed more story. And in fact, I have a feeling Andrew's going to tell you that they could have trimmed that back a little bit. I just think that it needed a couple more rewrites, and we didn't have to go so campy with some of the bad elements. I think we can bring those up to modern times as well. So that's the reason it has a low score for me. I got bored during the film. My score is slightly affected by the fact that there was a loud kid behind me. But thankfully McKenzie was sitting there like Chris Pratt with the Raptors, like calming me down during the film, trying to keep me chill. So that's where I'm at. Luke, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. I felt like going into it, the movie initially, like when it happened while watching it, I had a problem with it. But now, since I'm out of it and have had a chance to think about it, I don't mind it as much. But it ramped in really quick. We kind of got to the main plot very quick, and it was just a little bit of setup for who these characters are now, like where they've been since we last saw them, and then just quick introduction of the new characters, and it felt really quick.
Can you answer for me real quick why you feel better about that now? Because I have a thought about that.
Well, I feel better about it now because really what I wanted, it's like what Patrick said, really what I wanted out of this movie is dinosaurs. And so it was just quicker to get into dinosaurs.
So you were fine.
Yeah.
I would argue every single one of the Jurassic Park franchise does exactly that. You start the movie in the action and you ramp into it very quickly.
Right.
So I think it followed suit in that regard. And I think people enjoy it because then you start to see dinosaurs sooner.
Right, exactly. But it felt really, I mean, there were still like weird things that I don't understand why they were like, why in real life, you know, like when you do the whole "this would never really happen" kind of thing, like why the two people working at the agency or the nonprofit were actually part of the trip. Like, why did they come? I don't understand that still. Cause they never would have gone, but, it was, it is not a like super in-depth plot. It's not like, anything like, oh wow, that was a really cool idea. It was all, expected. There was one like twist reveal that I was like, yeah, okay. Like, it made me more worried about future movies than, you know, like I'm really worried about the state of Jurassic World now.
Really?
But this movie was fine. Like, it's it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like,
that's the subplot. So I think here's, you said it didn't have a lot of plot. It was a simple plot. In fact, it had, I think, four plots. Four individual parallel plots that made their showing at various points of the movie. One of them, I think, is the one you're talking about with the girl, with the little girl.
Yep.
No, we didn't need that at all. We didn't need it. It wouldn't have helped.
Well, we do. Well, obviously, we do need it for future movies. That's exactly why we need it.
That's it. That's the only reason. The only reason that lives there is because what's going to happen next.
It's kind of like Aquaman and Batman v Superman. Could have left it out.
Yeah. So I just think I think all of the things that you just said, I agree with everything you said. I even agree with all the stuff you said, Patrick. I just gave it a higher rating because I can remove myself from so we had this conversation. Patrick gets caught up. He wrote our whole article about it. We don't need to get into it. He wrote a whole article about it on Timed Edition about the stupid lever. All right, go read that article on Timed Edition. There'll be a link in the show notes. We don't have to get into the lever because Patrick's going to get all he's about to get Lucy up in this place.
I can see him posturing right now.
Okay, so the lever, right? He can suspend reality enough to think that these dinosaurs are living amongst these people, but he can't suspend reality enough to think that someone might build an unnecessary lever. And so I can get past that. I can jump that gap. I can suspend reality on all fronts enough to enjoy it at a higher level. So I think everything that you guys have said, I think you've covered all the
bases. I don't understand why the lever was out there in the room.
Well, that's – go read the article and then have the whole discussion
we'll
about it.
We'll talk about it later.
We'll double this episode if we bring up the whole lever conversation. So
it's a bar of soap lever, by the way, for those that don't know. That's a
sure. Yeah, obviously. It was the shower scene with Jeff Goldblum. Yeah.
And the Velociraptor.
The movie should have had at least 12% more Goldblum, and it would have given me like an 8.5 or a 9.
I could have just listen, because the movie opens with him talking like in a court setting.
And closes with him talking.
I could have done without the end monologue, though. I was just like, whatever, it's fine.
The end monologue is what makes it cheesy, but hearing his voice made it okay.
Whatever, you could have just put a camera in that court setting for an hour and a half, and I would have paid to watch that.
Like a 12 Angry Men version? And where they're debating the morality, that would actually
you'll
be a
see
really
that.
Cool.
Hey, trust me, you'll see that in like movie, like in 5 or 6 movies from now, there'll be a dinosaur lawyer.
But so, no,
that's maybe a little different than what I'm saying. No. But I like that you're agreeing with me, so I'm going to stay in this.
Five
world.
To six movies from now, dinosaurs will have taken over the moon. Mark this day. You know, it's funny that you say that, but that's what I want someone to do. We talked about it with Star Wars, and we're saying it now with Jurassic World with this franchise, but with any of these large franchises, I would love when people do these little spinoff films to just do them in a totally different film genre with the same property. I would love to get a one set film that's obviously in the Jurassic World universe, but it's like a single set in a courtroom. I would eat that up.
Yeah, that would be. I would love that movie actually. So, and if you haven't seen 12 Angry Men, and you don't understand that reference. Go watch 12 Angry Men. It's a classic. Okay, I think that's going to be it then for the topics, which means that's it for our episode. So you can find the show notes and links on mofonepodcast.com. You can and there's several links to go to after this episode. I feel like we've been doing a pretty good job in the last couple of weeks of really giving people homework.
Yeah.
To really read up on and see more and everything. I think that's You know, and from my opinion, that's really nice because there's more that you
it's
can learn
you
beyond
it's
the
what
episode.
It's what everybody wants.
Yeah, it's what the people are clamoring for. But you can follow us on all the different social platforms.
Clamoring.
Just search M of One Podcast. You can support the show on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/M of One Podcast to become a patron.
Oh, we have a new patron.
A couple bucks. We
Hi.
Do?
We do. What else are you so surprised, Andrew?
Well, I feel like maybe this is an off-air conversation, but maybe telling us in the actual record is what's surprising to
me.
Oh,
that's a good point. Yeah, it's Patrick LaCroix. I assume of the LaCroix fortune making the drinks.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
But anyway,
they pledged at the highest level, I assume.
Of the seltzer water fortune.
Yeah, but Patrick LaCroix, thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you, Patrick. Huge thank you. You can be like Patrick and support the show. It helps us out so much. It helps us continue to do some things. We've got some new ideas in the works, some ways that we're going to enhance the show and maybe change up a few things kind of coming down the road. And your help and support helps us so much with that, and we can't thank you enough. If you're a patron, thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you're not, just become one. It's super simple, and it's a set it and forget it kind of situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just kind of put it in there. And it's really simple. You can also support the show by rating and reviewing, liking, subscribing, sharing, following, commenting, all the things that happen on the internet that help people know that other stuff on the internet exists, do that stuff. And that helps us out too. We're on every platform. Like there's no excuse at this point.
Yeah.
You can join the conversation on Discord. We've referenced that a couple times in this episode. Go ahead and do that. It's fun. We have good conversations in there. That's where you're going to get to hear about the lever. So do that. And is that it?
That's it.
Gosh, I feel like, okay, yeah. Not being on YouTube helps with some of that stuff right now, too. Speaking of YouTube, we will have a couple things going onto our YouTube page in the coming days. Some game reviews and some things, that some playthroughs. So go check that out. But otherwise, for now, we're going to get out of this episode. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Luke.
Peace out.
Bye.
Hold on to your butts.